Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello, hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. You're here with me, Chelsea, for another episode. And we're going to be talking today about the best foods for weight loss and for fat burning. And I think it's really important to get some perspective on this to understand why certain foods are better for weight loss as opposed to other foods. And I'm going to share with you as well something that I think has been a real game changer for me, and really some of the reason that I have been successful with my weight loss and also why I've been able to maintain it. Because I do see a lot of people be successful initially and then kind of their habits drop off and they're not able to maintain their weight loss. And this is the one of the key reasons I think that I have and that I'm confident that I will for the rest of my life. And I want to share that with you. So we're going to talk about weight loss foods in general. And then we're going to talk about this thing that I think is the game changer. So this podcast episode is based off the YouTube video that I just did, which was the top five foods for weight loss. And in that YouTube video, I went over those things very, very briefly. But in this episode, I wanted to expand on that more and talk about some of the habits behind those things as well. That's what we're going to do at the end. Of course, we're going to talk about habits because it's quite hard to actually really give a lot of information in a YouTube video. Whereas I'm in your ears right now. Maybe you're working out. Maybe you're just pottering around the house, and we can have a bit more of a chat about it. So let's get into the episode. So first of all, when we talk about weight loss foods, you're going to see this term all over the place. And I get asked a lot, what is a good food for weight loss? What is what foods can I eat? Or people will say things to me like, can I drink coffee and lose weight? Or can I have fats in my diet? And I always think, yes, of course, you can have fats in your diet. You can have chocolate. And I've done an episode all about good versus bad weight loss foods. I don't think that there are good or bad foods. This is a spectrum, right? And there's foods that are going to be more helpful for weight loss. And there's going to be foods that are less helpful for weight loss. And they're going to tick different categories when it comes to how they affect weight loss. So that's about partly what we're going to get into. And those will be things like some foods are going to be higher in satiety, which means that you get more full from them. Some foods are going to be higher in fiber, which means that you've got more lasting fullness. Some things are going to be lower in calories, but lower in satiety. So you've got less calories there, but you're going to need more high fiber foods and more high satiety foods to help you actually stay full longer than 10 minutes, right? Like you can't just eat vegetables. It's not an effective weight loss strategy. So knowing how to judge these things as a whole and have an overview of how they work is so vital, in my opinion. And this is how you start to be able to make empowered decisions about food so that you don't have to go to some guru on Instagram, aka me, and say, can I have coffee or can I have avocado on my toast, or what would be better, toast or potatoes. You would actually know how to make those decisions for yourself. And I believe that's the goal. I really believe that anyone has the capacity, you right now listening, whether you have an IQ of 1 or an IQ of 50, see, I don't even know what the IQ scores are. I have no idea. What I'm trying to say is you do not have to be especially smart. You do not have to remember facts and figures to understand the basics of weight loss, all right? You are capable of that. And when you do, you are able to make empowered decisions. So in context, when we talk about great foods for weight loss, that has to be in the context of a calorie deficit. Whether you are on a whole foods plant-based diet, a keto diet, a carnivore diet, intermittent fasting, raw till 4, anything that you're doing, for you to be successful in terms of actually losing weight, burning up stored fat cells, you must be in a calorie deficit. So there's no weight loss foods, because food by definition is adding calories, right? And it's the absence of enough calories that actually leads to weight loss. But there are foods that are going to influence a calorie deficit. They're going to change that energy equation, the calories coming in and the calories coming out, in two key ways. So the first one is that they change the calorie input and they change the calorie output directly. They're directly either lowering calories or they are directly causing you to burn more energy through how they're metabolized. They are directly influencing that calories in, calories out equation, right? We have something called combustible and metabolizable. I never can say this right. Metabolizable calories, all right? So as you are chewing food, and your body is trying to break down that food, when you are consuming fiber, which is the cell walls of plant food, your body's trying to get out the calories that are inside that, right? But when you're eating fiber, because fiber by definition is part of the cell wall of plants that you can't actually chew, you can't actually break that down enough, it's not going to get all of the calories that come from that specific food. So this is another advantage of eating whole intact plant foods. And so there's a big difference between eating whole foods versus eating intact foods. So a whole food could be considered like oatmeal cookies, right? And you blend up the oatmeal into a flour and then you bake it. You haven't removed anything from that. That would be considered a whole food or a whole meal cookie. Why can't I say oat? But it's not the same as an intact plant food. So the intact version of that would be you get the whole oat groat and you cook it up and you eat it like that. So what happens in that instance is that because your body is only going to absorb the calories that directly come in contact with the intestine. So as you're digesting food along your intestinal wall, your body can only uptake calories that directly come in contact with the intestinal wall, and then they go into your bloodstream and they're transported to be used as fuel. But because you can't get to all of that, because some of those calories are trapped in fiber from intact grains and all the other things that fiber comes in, pretty much every single whole food has some fiber in there, you actually absorb less calories. So you might have the same amount of calories coming into your body. And this is where you go, a calorie coming in is not equal to another calorie. So you need to be in a calorie deficit to lose weight. But when it comes to input, a calorie from broccoli is not going to be the same as a calorie from sugar. Because when you've got that calorie coming from sugar, 100% of that is going to be absorbed because there's no fiber there to stop it. There's no fiber to trap some of it because all of that has been removed in the processing process. I don't know if you are meant to say processing process. In the process is probably what I should have said. So fiber is really key here for helping you to actually absorb less calories. And this is where you look at a whole foods plant-based diet and versus a diet which is not a whole foods plant-based diet, and you look at, okay, how many calories are absorbed for each of these two things. even if the calories coming into your body are exactly the same, let's say that's 1800 calories of whole plant foods versus 1800 calories of processed foods, even though this is the same input, the actual amount of calories that you absorb are going to be different. You're going to absorb less calories. So when you're thinking about this calorie in, calorie out equation that equates a calorie deficit, it's not just about what you see on paper as coming in. It really is mostly affected by how many calories are absorbed. So it's not calories eaten, it's calories absorbed that matter most. So you can see how whole plant foods are automatically going to influence that equation in a positive way when you're trying to lose weight. But another thing that happens there is that that undigested fiber, it becomes the ultimate comfort food for your gut microbiome. And I've been teaching my little girls all about, not all about gut microbiome, but it's one of the ways that I try and help them to encourage them, I should say, to eat their vegetables and eat their healthy foods. As I say, you know, you got to feed your little animals. And my kids will now say like, "Mom, look, I'm feeding my little animals." And they've actually learnt microbiome. And I'll test them. I'll be like, what are your little animals called in your stomach? And they say, microbiome. And it's so incredibly cute. But the fiber there, and you can treat yourself like a kid. You can encourage yourself to be eating more vegetables and eating more fiber, because you get to feed your little animals. You get to feed those gut microbiome. And what that does is that it actually helps you to burn more fat, because they produce something called fatty acids. And fatty acids actually slow fat absorption. And we'll talk a little bit later on about how this is helpful for weight loss as well. So some crazy stuff here. Another thing that happens is that you also have a higher thermic effect when you're eating whole plant foods. That means that it takes more calories to actually metabolize the food that you're eating. It's harder in a way, or it takes more energy to digest a broccoli or digest some beans than it does to digest a popsicle. So there's all these other effects as well that happen, like fat blocking, not just fat slowing. There's all these amazing mechanisms that come into play to directly influence calories in and calories out, and influence the amount of calories that you're burning and the amount of calories that your body actually absorbs when you eat a whole foods plant-based diet. And this is another reason that I really just don't think that calorie counting is super effective. Not only is it hard to do long term, but you're not actually taking advantage of a lot of this stuff. You're seeing calories as the only thing that matters, when in fact there are so many other things that matter in terms of getting into a calorie deficit. And all of these mechanisms are going to work together in this perfect unity, in this perfect kind of synergy, in a way that actually helps you to lose weight without needing to track them obsessively. So the second thing that happens here is that they indirectly change calorie input and calorie output by changing behavior. And this is another thing where you go, okay, so weight loss foods would need to do this for you to say, okay, this is a good food for weight loss. It would have to be something that would actually change your behavior. Because remember, okay, a calorie deficit is vital for fat loss, but just eating a Twinkie, yes, you'd be in a calorie deficit if everything else that you're eating is getting you into a calorie deficit, right? But a Twinkie is not going to help the calories in terms of your behavior. It is not going to keep you fuller for longer, meaning that you're less likely to binge. It is going to activate a whole lot of dopamine in your brain and make you want more of that stuff. It is not going to help you feel satiated, therefore you're going to be reaching for more calories later on. It's not going to curb your appetite. And this is what whole plant foods do. Being high in fiber means that they actually curb your appetite hours and hours after eating, even 11 hours. And we'll talk about that. Whole plant foods are also high in unrefined carbohydrates and low in fat. We're talking about things like potatoes, sweet potatoes, rice, beans, anything that is on that lower end of the calorie density scale. all of those things are going to give you more glycogen stores, right? Which is going to lead to spontaneously moving more, which is going to burn more calories. Because glycogen is your body's preferred source of fuel. It's your quick energy stores, and that comes from carbohydrates. So when you're eating predominantly a high carbohydrate, high unprocessed diet, then you're going to be able to spontaneously have more energy, which is going to lead to you burning more calories. And this is one thing that I've noticed a lot, where people will almost get themselves into a hole where they'll be kind of ratcheting down their calories all the time, the calories coming in. And then what happens is you're spontaneously moving less and less and less to compensate for that, because there's always that compensation there, right? There's always some kind of way that your body is trying to reach an equilibrium again, for better or for worse. So if you instead are trying to focus on whole plant foods, potatoes, rice, beans, all these ones that we've talked about, and you're not constantly ratcheting down that number to lose weight quicker, or because you think your metabolism is broken, because it isn't, right? It really isn't. Then you're going to actually be able to afford to eat more, because you will be moving more. It's not always the answer to just lower your calories more and more and more. So these two things are what you need to be thinking about when you're asking the question, is this food going to be great for weight loss or not? Number one, is it in and of itself going to change the calorie input and output directly? Low in calories, low in calorie density. Is it high in fiber? Is it high in water, which is going to lower the calorie density? It's going to have less calories absorbed if it's a whole version of whatever it is. If it's oat groats compared to oatmeal bread. So that's the direct way that it changes it. And then the second way, how is that food going to influence the calorie input and output by changing my behavior? Is that going to increase my cravings, or is it going to lower my cravings? Is it going to keep me fuller for longer? Is it going to make it easier to stick to my diet, or is it going to make it harder? So when making a judgment about individual foods in terms of whether they're great for weight loss or not, I think that there's three main categories to be looking at. The first one is calories, calorie density, and that is going to be a spectrum. And this is where it's important where you go, there's more than just one thing to measure here, because the best or the lowest calorie foods are vegetables. And they are low in calories because they are high in water. Water doesn't have any calories. Most vegetables are about 95% calories and water. They're not 95% calories, 95% water. And so the amount of calories in that is going to be less. The more water you have in something, the less the calories are going to be. That's going to be the biggest influencer. It's the reason that cooked oatmeal is going to be much lower in calorie density than dried oatmeal that you've not put on any water with. It's why fruit, whole fruit that has not been dried, is going to be much, much lower in calorie density than the dried version. It's just that when you remove water, you've got more calories for a smaller amount of food. All right, it's all it is a concentration issue. So when I'm looking at food, I'm wanting food that is high in water. That's going to be the thing that lowers the calorie density and means that I actually get more satiety, because a lot of satiety is based on how much water is actually in something. Because water adds bulk, water plus fiber adds bulk, and that is what really fills up your stomach. So satiety is that feeling of not only being full, but also not wanting to eat anymore. It's incredibly important to know that you've eaten enough. So the problem with processed foods is that they are low in satiety and they're high in calories. So by the time that you're feeling satisfied, you have eaten way more calories than you need. Potatoes are one of those things that have been given a bad name, but it's completely unfounded for this reason, because they are comparatively low in calories, but they are high in satiety. And why are they high in satiety? Because they have a high water content. So the first one was calories, calorie density. Lowest food on the planet are vegetables because they are high in water. And then as you go up this calorie density chart or scale or spectrum, whatever you want to call it, you've got foods that have less water. So after vegetables, you've got fruit. Fruit are probably the second highest thing in water. And if think about how this works as a spectrum, right? Because you go, okay, berries, strawberries, watermelon are going to have more water content than banana. They're going to have more water content than persimmon or some kind of quite dry, dense fruit. Therefore, berries are going to be lower in calories than banana. Watermelon is going to be lower in calories than figs because of water content. So calories are going to be the thing that I look at when it comes to whether a food is great for weight loss or not. And then when I talked about satiety, satiety is the second one. So satiety is really, really important because you can't just have water and be full. You've probably experienced this before. And I remember trying to do this when I was losing weight at one point. And I would try and drink lots of water. It's actually such a common kind of weight loss advice thing where you're just told to drink water when you're hungry or you're probably dehydrated or this other crap. I don't know if you're dehydrated or not, but when you are wanting a pizza, guzzling a liter of water is not going to cut it. And it's not actually healthy for you to drink a ton of water at a time anyway. It's how Michael Greger's first patient died. Like his first patient that died was they had a pathological thirst and they put them in a cell. They put them in a room basically. They couldn't get any water and they didn't cut off the water supply to the toilet and the patient died because he drank the toilet water. And it wasn't because it was gross. It was just because he couldn't stop drinking. He drank too much water in a short space of time. So it's not good to drink more than 3 cups of water in an hour. You can actually die, which is crazy. And now that I know about that, I don't scull water back anymore. You can find more about that and how not to die. And that I'm sure there'll be some information about that on nutritionfacts.org as well if you are curious. So satiety is more about this feeling of feeling like you are satisfied. And I kind of think about that like when you've had Christmas dinner and someone brings out the pudding and you're like, no, I can't. And it can be your favorite food in the world. When you're stuffed and when you're satiated and you're satisfied, you don't want it anymore. And that feeling of just wanting to eat goes away. You're not going to have that with vegetables. And a lot of people that I see, they don't eat enough satiating food. They'll eat a lot of vegetables. This is not everyone. This is just a pocket of people. Maybe it's you, because they're scared of eating things like potatoes and then they won't eat them. So they'll eat a ton of vegetables instead. They'll get really full and bloated, but they won't be satiated. And then that leads to later on binging. So in terms of actually massively influencing your behavior, satiety is incredibly important. And high satiety foods are things like potatoes, beans, rice, pasta. And again, this is a spectrum of satiety. A banana is more satiating than watermelon, partly because watermelon is just going to go through you so quickly because it is mostly water. You've probably heard things being talked about as starches. It's a great all-encompassing term. And these kind of starches that I've mentioned, beans, whole grains, rices, potatoes, all of those foods are high in satiety. Potatoes are the highest in satiety out of every food. They have the highest satiety index of any food, and oatmeal is second, which is really fascinating. So you're looking at these foods and you're asking yourself, okay, is this low in calorie density, which basically equates to what's the water content of it? Is it a whole food? And then you're also looking at what is the satiety of it. And as I've said, potatoes, sweet potatoes, beans, rice, they have the highest satiety, with potatoes being the most. So these are the first two categories to be thinking about when you think, is something great for weight loss? And then the third one is fiber. And fiber is so incredibly important because it influences both the calories in something and the satiety of something. Fiber is one of those mechanisms, like water, that has the most influence on those two things. And beans are the highest fiber foods on the planet. And remember how I was saying that your body can only absorb calories that come in direct contact with the intestinal walls? So what happens when you consume these high fiber foods like beans is not all the calories are absorbed by you. And then that fiber becomes fuel for your good gut bacteria, which is your gut microbiome. So you're getting the advantage of the fact that you've got bulk in there from the fiber. So you've got fullness from the fiber without absorbing those calories. Similar to water, you've got that water content there, but you're not absorbing those calories. And then you're actually creating the perfect environment for your gut microbiome. And that's incredibly important for your health, but also your weight loss. And one of the cool ways that this happens is that you have some of those calories that get trapped in the fiber and they're undigested when they reach your ileum. So the ileum is the last part of your small intestine before the colon. And when those undigested calories are detected by your body, at that point, they actually help to suppress your hunger. So this is known as the ileal break, and it's one of the really cool long-term benefits of eating a high-fiber diet. So it's not only when you're actually at that meal and you're pushing your plate away and you're like, nah, I'm done, I'm full, I'm satisfied. You actually eat less calories, you're more satisfied at a meal 11 hours later because of the ileal break, which is because of fiber and not all the calories that you're eating being absorbed straight away, which is what happens when you drink a Coke or you eat a donut. Because there's no fiber and there's little water that's actually slowing down the absorption of those calories, you're not getting the effect of that delayed absorption of calories or a delayed detection of calories as that goes down your intestinal wall, right? It's part of the reason why processed food is so bad for your blood sugar levels, because you're getting that rush of calories without anything to slow it down really, really quick. So you've got that big surge of sugar effectively that is going into your bloodstream. And then you normally have the dip from that as well. As I mentioned earlier, the other thing that happens when you consume fiber is that your gut microbiome eat the fiber and then they produce short chain fatty acids. So these work short term and long term as an appetite suppressant, which is a great thing. It's something that people have tried to replicate with drugs so many times and not had as great an effect. So what they do is they stimulate the production of certain hormones, and one of them is leptin, which is known as the hunger hormone. So you're taking advantage of natural hunger suppression there, which is great when hunger is one of the things that stops people from staying in a calorie deficit. And beans are also high in resistant starch. So you've probably heard that eating cold starches like cooling down pasta or having like a rice salad or eating potatoes cold is going to increase resistant starch. And it does slightly, but not as much as resistant starch is naturally in beans. So resistant starch is great because it's not broken down by your body. It becomes, in the same way that fiber does, fuel for your gut microbiome. So you're not absorbing those calories, plus you're having the added benefit of feeding your gut microbiome. So there's a ton of amazing benefits of eating beans and eating high fiber foods in general. So when you're judging whether something is great for weight loss or not, you're looking at calorie density, first of all, you're looking at satiety, and you're looking at fiber content. And then specifically, foods that fit into those categories is Well, we've talked about beans, beans being high in fiber. They are very high in satiety, and all the reasons that come into why that is so great for you in terms of weight loss. And the fact that they're also low in that calorie dense scale. So they're about 600 calories per pound. Potatoes are about 400 calories. Vegetables are about 100 to 200 calories. But oil is about 4,000 calories and crackers are about 2,000 calories. So you can see in terms of the spectrum, and it's always a spectrum, guys. It's always a better or worse, not a good or bad. Beans are great for that. Another great one and food that I eat pretty much all the time is berries. Berries are great because they are super high in antioxidants. They're low in calorie density because they are high in water. And adding berries can actually blunt the insulin spike from eating high glycemic foods. High glycemic foods are typically refined grains, think white bread, pancakes, sugar. But by adding berries with the same white bread, which in effect is adding more sugar, it actually blunts the insulin spike. So remember how we talked about how fiber helps to slow the absorption of calories? There's something in fruit which actually helps to block starch absorption, and it's called polyphenols. So you absorb less of the calories from the starchy carbohydrates, particularly refined carbs, when you're eating berries with them, and you're also getting the benefit of them being low in calorie density, high in satiety. They've got the fiber in there as well, and they're adding more water, so more fullness, more bulk to your meal. And they're super versatile as well. They're really, really cheap and easy to get when you buy them from the freezer section. And they are naturally sweet. That's one of the reasons that I really love berries, is that I can use them in the same way that I would treats, or I can use, like, it's just amazing to snack on strawberries when they're in season. We haven't had a lot of strawberries this year, even though it's summer here right now. So there's no particular order here of the foods that I love for weight loss, but one of the other ones is potatoes, and you can probably guess why. They're the highest in the satiety index. They are naturally low in calorie density at about 400 calories per pound. They are an unrefined carbohydrate. They have not had any of the fiber removed. They have not had any of the water removed. Now, think about that for a second, though. If you were to change the cooking process of potatoes, for instance, cut them really thin and then deep fry them, it's going to change the calorie density and it's going to change the satiety of them as well. So how you cook something and how you process something is one of the things that is going to influence calorie density, satiety, and fiber as well. So 1 pound of potatoes being about 400 calories, the comparative calories for potato chips is about 60 grams. So that's about 2 ounces. So you can see this is a huge difference. If a pound of potatoes is going to make you full and you needed to eat a pound of potato chips to feel the same fullness, which you wouldn't anyway because it doesn't have that water content, doesn't have that fiber content, imagine how much calories that is. I haven't actually done the maths on this, but it's thousands and thousands of calories. Most of the time, the problem with people eating potatoes is not the potato itself. It's what people put on it. They typically cook it in oil. They put butter on it. But when you eat plain potatoes and you add them as parts of your meal, they are incredibly good for weight loss and they are incredibly satisfying. One of the things that I've started doing is actually adding potatoes to things like my pasta dishes, because I personally, it's just me personally, don't find pasta to be very satiating, okay? So in the sauce, when I'm making it, I'm going to grate in sweet potato and I'm also going to put lentils, which are beans, into that tomatoey vegetable sauce so that when I have the pasta with that, I'm having the pasta because it tastes good and I like the texture of it, but I'm not relying on that for satiety and I'm not relying on that for the fiber and the fullness. I'm doing that because I've got the potatoes and the beans in the sauce. So this is just one of the ways that when I'm thinking about foods that I'm cooking, that comes into play. I'm thinking about those things. So another food that is obviously awesome for weight loss, and I probably should have said this first, is vegetables. And I like cruciferous vegetables. Yes, the ones that make you fart. Things like broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, cabbage. They're low in calorie density. They're high in antioxidants and protein. They contain thiacloids to help block fat absorption. And one of the things that's great about blocking fat absorption is because of the ileal brake. Do you remember the ileal brake? What happens is you've got those undigested fat calories that reach your ileal, and then they help to turn off your hunger 11 hours later. So it's a natural appetite suppressant to be eating foods that have thiacloids, green foods, right? Green foods are great for you. And I know there's a lot of people who, you know, like they eat their veggies and they do the 50-50 plate, but they don't eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables. And sometimes I just got to be honest, I see that and I worry a little bit because I just wonder if you're getting enough of the right kind of nutrients. Because cucumber, tomato, capsicum, those foods are great, but they do not have the same health benefits as broccoli, as kale, as, you know, green beans or some of these like very, very high nutrient vegetables. So yes, eat your cucumber. Yes, eat your white cauliflower, all that kind of stuff. But please don't neglect these really, really powerhouse packed green vegetables and find a way to just add them into your diet. It's not super hard to add them in with whatever you're eating. So that's my takeaway from that. And then the last one in terms of foods that I think are fantastic for weight loss is oats. Why? Low in calorie density. They're also extremely versatile. They have a low glycemic index. And when they're eaten in their whole form, they're even better. So oat groats. And I was saying grouts for a long time on my YouTube channel and people were getting upset about it. And I couldn't figure out how to say it, but it is groat, like oat. I should have known. So oats are great for that. And you can probably see that if you were to have them dry, if you were not to cook them with water, because they're dry, they are going to be much, much higher in calorie density. So keep that in mind when you're eating oats as well, that part of the benefit of them is the fact that you add a lot of water to them so that you're able to have more satiety and lower the calorie density of them. All right, now we're going to get into what I think is the most important part of this episode, and that is how I think I have had long-term success and what I believe is the game changer, and it's kind of surprising, is that I eat foods that I love. And it's as simple as that, but I think it's had a huge impact. And I was thinking about this the other day, and just the fact that I've seen a lot of people try and model their diet off of influencers or people that they look up to, but they don't maintain that way of eating. So they'll do things like a 30-day raw challenge, or they'll completely cut out salt and spices and condiments, and they can keep it up for a while, but then they go back to their normal kind of way of eating. And it's kind of like almost like these two extremes where it's one of the things is, you know, really healthy, like the best thing that you could do. And then the other one is you don't do that anymore. You don't continue eating that way. And I was mulling over this because I see it a lot with people. And I was thinking about the fact that I'm actually really privileged to have grown up in a house where my mum is a fantastic cook. And I'm a good cook. I enjoy the cooking process. I enjoy creating meals when I'm not stressed and when I have more time. And I genuinely think that I can create better meals than most cafes. That might sound conceited. I've worked in a cafe. I've worked as a chef. I've worked as a cook. We had our own vegan meal delivery service for a while. And I genuinely believe that I can make some of the best food that I've ever tasted, that I've made myself. And I'm not telling you this to toot my own horn. I'm telling you this because I get to create meals that I love every day. So me eating the way that I do is not something that feels like an effort. And when I am creating something that is like a little bit more decadent, I'm still using the principles that I talked about today to make it as best as I possibly can. Let me tell you what that looks like. The other day, it was a couple of weeks ago, I thought I wanted to try and make a bit of a brunch. We've just bought this coffee machine. It's fantastic. It's changed my life. This is such a testament to how environment shapes your behavior like nothing else. James Clear talks about this in his book, Atomic Habits, which is the Bible on habit change, in my opinion. And I was buying a lot of coffee before that. And we got this coffee machine, and it's been shocking to me how little coffee I'm buying. And the fact that I'd almost rather make my own coffee, even though I'm not great at it, because it's just so convenient. And I didn't think it would have this effect. Anyway, so things have changed here in New Zealand as well. We've got vaccine passports in New Zealand. And you can think whatever you want about it. It's changed some stuff for us here. And I personally don't really like using them. I wouldn't use a vaccine passport. I've decided to not use that in New Zealand. And so we have stopped going out and having a coffee on a Saturday morning. Another thing, environment shapes behavior, right? So we kind of have gotten to this point where it's like, well, what are we going to do instead of our after the market, go as a family, have a coffee, have a fluffy with the kids? And so we've started to make coffees at home, and I decided that I was going to try and make a bit of a brunch. I know this is a really long-winded story, but it is getting somewhere. I cooked up some scrambled tofu and I had some baked beans in there. I put some potatoes and I had some steamed up potatoes. I cut them up, put some salt and pepper, some herbs, and then I put that in the air fryer and they got all crispy. And then I roasted up some tomatoes, and we had tons of beautiful tomatoes from the market. Roasted those up in the air fryer as well. Literally just put them in quarters, put some salt and pepper and some herbs on them, roasted them up. And so I'm left with this meal here, which has got this, it's the scrambled tofu, and I put some nutritional yeast, some salt and pepper, basically followed a recipe online. It left out the oil. And so I'm left with something on my plate, which was so much better than any cafe I've ever been to in terms of a vegan brunch, with the scrambled tofu, the baked beans, the refried potatoes, and the tomatoes. And I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about the fact that it wouldn't even enter my head to cook this meal with oil. It wouldn't even enter my head that this would be like an aberration from my diet. Because my thought process when making that meal, even though it was amazing, was how can I use these principles to make it the best that it possibly can be? How can I add a bit more veg? Oh, you know what? Tomatoes would be great with this. I'm going to add some tomatoes. How can I make it higher in satiety? Oh, you know what? Beans would be great. Rather than grabbing the bread is higher in calorie density and it's not as satisfying. So rather than having toast, you know, I'm cooking up those potatoes to have there. I'm thinking about, well, you know, I don't need oil to make this. I'm going to try and make this without oil. Adding the veggies is going to lower the calorie density, and tomatoes work perfectly with that. I've got my high satiety food, which is my potatoes in there, and I've got tofu, which is, you know, it's a bit processed, but it's minimally processed. And I added salt. I added condiments. You know, these baked beans, they're not beans from scratch. They've got a little bit of sugar in there, but it's minimal. It's minimal compared to pretty much anything else that I could be eating, you know, if I made sugary, grainy pancakes. And it just kind of struck me that I just made a meal that we had a great brunch with, and it's so fascinating how you decide not to do something, or you have something, you know, circumstances change and there's so many things outside of your control, and you get creative with that, and you can almost, it can almost be better. We had our coffee at home, the kids had their little fluffies, we had this great brunch, and we're going to make this a bit of a tradition. Like, it was so nice. And I was like, I have been successful eating this way because I just make the food that I want to eat, and it's not this all in, all out thing. It's not like one day I'm eating just potatoes and broccoli and then the next day I'm cooking up something with oil. It's not like that. I think about these principles that I talked to you about today. And I mean, I didn't add in here oil, the fact that oil is incredibly high in calories. And the reason for that is it has no fiber. It has no water. All of that's been removed. And that fat is the highest calorie macronutrient. It's 9 calories per gram, whereas carbs or protein are 4 calories per gram. So all I'm doing in making this meal that I would choose over the fatty, loaded, oily breakfasts that I've had at some fantastic vegan cafes, all I'm doing here is using basic principles to make it slightly better. And what actually happens is it is so much better. And it's really interesting because I don't have to flip in my diet. I don't have to go from eating one way to eating another. I literally just try and do the best that I can. And I think that this has been probably the biggest reason that I've been successful is that I continue to eat foods that I like. And sometimes I will go without having salt on something, but most of the time I add salt. I add herbs and spices. I keep the condiments, even if they have a little bit of sugar. There has been very, very few times that I have been militant with myself because I want this to be something that I can do for the rest of my life. And I listened to this great episode the other day with James Clear and Brené Brown, and I'll link it in the description. And she asked him, what are some things that people commonly get wrong about habit change? And he was saying that one of the questions people always ask is, how long does it take to build a habit? And the answer is actually, it's not 30 days, it's not 90 days, it's the rest of your life. Because if you stop, it's not a habit anymore. And it gets you thinking, doesn't it? How would you do things differently if you thought that way? If this was the rest of your life, if you instead of trying to do something for 30 days or, you know, with a finish line in mind, right? That's the key difference. If you're thinking about the end, then that's not a habit. If you're thinking about getting to the end, that's not a habit, because a habit is something that you do day in, day out, and it becomes autopilot. It becomes something that you just continue doing it. And so if you were thinking about building a habit of healthy eating, of eating that led not only to weight loss, but also to you being able to maintain that for the rest of your life, would you be doing things differently? I want you to think about that. And for me, I wouldn't, because I eat in a way that I enjoy. And there's these 4 laws of behavioral change. The first one is make it obvious. So you want to make it obvious for yourself to actually be able to do that good behavior that you're trying to do. An example of this would be, if you're trying to eat more vegetables, is having those vegetables right there when you open the fridge, making it easy and obvious for you to actually grab them. The second one is to make it attractive. And that's where you want to make it more attractive for you to do that good habit. This could be because you get to mark it off on a habit tracker, or because it's delicious, right? It makes it easier for you to actually do it. It's attractive to do it. The third one is to make it easy. This is where you remove the obstacles to you actually doing that good thing that you want to do. So rather than saying that you're going to run 10Ks a day, you go and say, well, you know what? I'm going to put my running shoes on and it's only going to take me 2 minutes. So you're starting to do something towards that habit that you're wanting to develop as a runner, but you're making it as easy as possible so that you keep doing that thing and keep voting towards that habit that you're trying to develop. And then the fourth one is to make it satisfying. And this is where you put things in place that it is more satisfying to do it than it would be to not do it. So for example, I've just started this running habit where I'm running 5Ks a day, and I'm at a point where I can commit to something like that, and that is doable for me. All right, you might not be at that point. That's all right. You're not competing with me. You're competing with you. You're trying to improve yourself. That has become incredibly satisfying because I'm doing it with two other girls, and we've all got Garmins, and I can see their running route on the Garmin app. I can see when they've gone out and run the 5K. I can see their pace, and I can see that every single day. And it's so incredibly satisfying when I see them comment, you know, well done, like good job. And I see, you know, Ange went out with a pram and she did the loop with a pram, and Fran went out there and she, you know, she smashed it in under 6 minutes per K. And it's incredibly satisfying to complete that habit, even though I don't want to do it all the time. So the key to creating good habits and breaking bad ones is to understand these four laws and how to alter them for your specific needs, right? And when I think about the fact that I've been able to be successful and on this diet and this way of eating in a way that I never could for so many years, and I see so many people struggle with, is that I've used all of these four laws. I've made it obvious by setting up my environment that way. I've made it attractive. And this is super, super important because I've always been able to make foods that I enjoy. I've made it easy for that same reason. And I've made it super satisfying. Do you see how this has become now this autopilot habit for me to do that? And every goal is doomed to fail if it goes against this kind of human nature that we have. We're always going to default to our most obvious, attractive, and easy and satisfying habits. And most of the time, those are not actions that lead us where we want to go. So my encouragement to you in this is to tweak your recipes on a really practical level. Tweak your recipes to be the best that they can possibly be using these kind of principles that we've talked about today. Low in calorie density, high in satiety, high in fiber, all right? That's going to help you, like no oil in there. That's going to help you to eat foods that you enjoy. Make better versions of the foods that you love rather than just having, you know, your diet foods versus your foods that you love. Combine those two. Have foods that are improving your habits. Get out of this all or nothing thinking. Remember that whole quote of, you know, what would you do differently if you had to do this for the rest of your life? How would you see this differently? You're here to build a habit. How do you get out of all or nothing thinking? By doing the damn thing, right? You don't get out of all or nothing thinking by thinking about how to get out of all or nothing thinking. You just make a plan and then you act on it imperfectly. If you want to get out of all or nothing thinking, it's probably just getting off your butt and eating a vegetable right now and it's not perfect and you didn't necessarily plan it properly. It's just doing it, right? It's just literally doing it. And there was this awesome story that I was reading in the Lean Plants Facebook group the other day. And to me, this is just the hugest win because it's really showing how you can change ingrained habits when you start to do these things. One of the members was saying that she felt so good because she was literally mid-binge and she stopped herself mid-binge. She's like, you know what? You know, I've already come so far, but I'm not going to keep it going. I'm going to do something that feels slightly better. And she made a slightly better decision and she stopped mid-binge. Do you know how hard it is to do that? You do. We all know how hard it is to do that. But that's where the gold mine is here. That's where really you can start to do something for the long haul is when you start to go, hey, this doesn't have to be perfect. It needs to be obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying. So I'm going to do that to the best of my ability with the tools that I have, with the knowledge that I have of how to do that. And if you don't know how to do that, that's what we teach in Lean with Plants. And we are opening up again this week on the 27th of January, 2021. You can find out all about that by clicking the description. We'll take you there to the website. So actions change feelings. We've got to just get good at, over time, making these little changes. That's going to change how we see ourselves. It's going to change our belief system. And you get to choose to strengthen the identity that you want to have on a daily basis in small ways. And that's really by voting with your actions for that identity that you want. Things become second nature when you practice them. Practice doesn't make perfect. It just makes you improve. Perfection, if it's not something that you are going to do or maintain or find obvious, attractive, or easy or satisfying for the rest of your life, is probably not really helping you get where you want to go long term anyway. So rather than constantly looking for the perfect diet, the perfect solution, start instead by saying, well, how could I make this easier for myself? How can I make it more obvious and attractive? And as I was thinking about this episode, the thing that came to my mind is, first of all, I'm really lucky that I know how to cook. I'm really lucky that I know how to use spices and I know what combinations work together. I'm lucky that I'm a good cook. And then I watched this little YouTube clip, and it was a business thing. And the guy was saying something that really hit home for me. And he said, what's your skill stack? Look at your skill stack. And if you're sufficient in any of those areas that you need, get off your butt and upskill. And it was just like this, damn, like so impactful. And I'm good at cooking because I have done it so much. I'm good at putting together food because I've done it so much. And for me, that has really helped my success. You don't necessarily have to be good at cooking to succeed. There's a lot of people that aren't, all right? You don't have to. You can make takeout work for you. You can make simple recipes, not so much takeout every day, but I mean, you can get plain rice, you can get steamed veggies, right? You can make simple, easy food work for you. And that is really key as well, because it makes it easy and it makes it obvious. But if you need to upskill in some way for this to be easier, more attractive, more satisfying, and more obvious for you, then don't sit around and just whinge about the fact that you don't have that yet. Put in a bit of effort, and it could be a 2-minute effort, to start equipping yourself with the tools that you need to do that. Because ultimately, the only person that loses if you don't do that is you. My success has hinged on me having a way that I can eat for the rest of my life. That's the biggest thing. That's a no-brainer. I like eating how I do. I don't feel like I'm on a diet. It's not something that I'm waiting for the finish line for. The more you can do that with your habits, the more likely you are to succeed long term. That does not mean that you have to cook, but it means that you need to be thinking about how you make this easier, more attractive, more satisfying, and more obvious for you. So what does that look like? And then move quickly, act fast, so that you can actually start improving on that and you can actually build some momentum. Habits don't happen by thinking. Habits happen by doing it again and again, imperfectly, and slowly over time starting to change your belief in yourself. That is what happens with habits, and that is how I have been successful. So the biggest takeaways from this, when we look at that at a physiological level, is weight loss foods are ones that hit those three main categories. Low in calorie density specifically. high in satiety. Satiety is huge. It's a lot influenced by water and by fiber. High in fiber, because that's going to influence satiety, and it's also going to influence calorie density. These are things that will help you to lower the calories coming into your body, lower the calories that are being absorbed, help you to burn more calories, help you to move more, and help your behavior. And then from a behavioral change point, look at how to make this obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying. And if there is a gap there between your skill set or something that you need to do that and how you are currently living, then start breaching that gap. Start asking yourself how this can be more satisfying for you. Because if you get to the point where this is no longer feels like a diet, then you're going to keep doing it. And then that's where you get confidence that you will be able to do this for the rest of your life and maintain the results that you're working so hard for, right? Okay, this has ended up being a super long episode. I hope that you've enjoyed this one, and I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget that Lean of Plants is opening again on the 27th of January. It's a few days away from now, and we would love to invite you to join the fam if you are wanting to get really clear about how weight loss works so that you can make empowered decisions that will work for you and your specific situation. Jump on in. If you are wanting to create habits that last you a lifetime and you're sick of quick fixes that don't work, jump in. If you are wanting to be spoon-fed a meal plan, if you are not wanting to have to think about it ever, don't join. It's not for you. Maybe it's just not for you yet. Lean of Plants is for women who really want to make this a lifestyle that they can sustain. And that's not cookie cutter. If that's you, then we can help you. And we really, really want to be a part of your journey. All right, that's it. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your week. And as always, let me know if you have any thoughts on the podcast. I'd love to see and read your reviews. I'd love to hear from you. And go out there and eat a vegetable. Go out there and make an amazing brunch. You got this. You're going to crush it. Okay, I'll talk to you next week. Bye.